Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. I finally saw the first episode of True Blood, season 5. Yeah, it's looking like shaping up to be a good season.
I think it is, yeah.
Oh, shook it. I actually don't know what that means, but it's just you guys do it every time you talk about True Blood, so.
Yeah, you have no excuses now. They now have like the Japanese subtitle versions.
Really? Oh, really? Oh, that actually does mean I can probably watch it now.
It can get kind of bloody.
Maybe not then. The wife doesn't like blood. The explanation for the audience is that if it has Japanese subtitles, I can watch it with my wife, so I have I can actually make time to watch it. She doesn't like me sitting alone watching TV.
Well, you could say it's a romance and just slip it in. Ah, sucker punch.
Yeah, that'll last for an episode.
Yeah, but you know what? You'll at least get to watch that episode.
This is true. Speaking of finally getting around to things, I just saw Bad Boys, the original one.
Oh, yeah, I was done talking about True Blood. I love how we introduced the topic and I don't get to say anything.
So you know who's a real bad boy? That Eric Northman.
Yeah.
There you go. How's that?
Yeah. Thank you. I was just going to say that the werewolf pack, I don't know what happened between last season and this season.
Well, I know what happened.
But damn. Yeah.
What happened is they got a lot sexier. That's what you want to say.
Yeah, it's like suddenly half the pack is female and hot. Yeah.
They needed a ratings boost.
I don't think so, but damn. Yeah. It's appreciated. They already had a lot of eye candy for the ladies, and it's about time us men got some.
About time.
Yeah, we're poorly neglected in the TV series.
Yeah, exactly. Little manpower. You go, man. Sorry, you finally saw Bad Boys?
Oh, yes, I finally saw Bad Boys. And it's weird, like, I can imagine that back in the day when, like, this movie came out, everyone would have been really excited by Michael Bay's style, but having seen so many Michael Bay movies now, it was actually really kind of boring.
So it was just a whole bunch of explosions after explosions?
Yeah, there were a lot of explosions. They had, like, the big circle camera going around, and, it's very, very Michael Bay.
I don't remember. I think I've seen Bad Boys and not Bad Boys 2. Mm-hmm. This is the one that ends on an island?
No, this one ends at an airport. Spoiler!
All right. I guess I saw Bad Boys 2. or maybe not.
No wonder I didn't understand it. It was 2.
Yeah, I couldn't follow that. What's with the chemistry? Why do these guys hang out?
I couldn't follow the plot. Oh, wait, it's a Michael Bay movie. I mean, I couldn't follow the explosions.
Yeah. Why are they bad?
I mean, I can see that they're boys.
They're not that young.
Yeah. So, you don't recommend it, eh?
It was fun to watch, but it was just another Michael Bay movie. You'd get about the same out of it as you'd get out of watching Transformers or something like that. I also saw Men in Black 3.
You know, Will Smith. Will Smith's in Bad Boys, right?
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Will Smith-a-thon.
Yeah.
I didn't actually think of that, but I guess so. It was all right. It was about on par with the other ones. It wasn't anything special. It has a huge plot hole in it, but so what else is new?
No. So, yeah, you didn't notice that you were watching 2 Will Smith movies? What was that?
Well, like, I didn't watch them because of Will Smith. It was just by chance, and I actually didn't even think about it.
No, it's entirely possible. Like, a while back, I picked up, like, Kill Bill and Paycheck.
Hold on. The connection is Uma Thurman?
Yeah. I didn't even realize that. My girlfriend was like, you have a thing for Uma Thurman? I'm like, oh, no, I just wanted to see this movie. So she didn't really believe me, but...
Who did?
My girlfriend didn't believe me.
Oh, okay. Is this the girlfriend we've never met?
The previous one. I said a girlfriend.
Oh, a girlfriend.
Ah.
Yeah, that then died.
Yeah. Hence my hand gesture of a car slamming into a wall.
All right, shall we move on?
Yep, let's do it.
Well, in our month of debuts, we have another series that we'd like to debut, and that's Rogues. And this is when we're going to put a spotlight on a particular crime and the criminals who perpetuate them. And to start off, we're going to look at the black market and black marketeers. And we're going to divide it by what it is, why do people do it, and how do they do it. And we're going to look at real examples, fictional examples, and how to tie it into your game. So to start off, what is the black market?
Well, looking into it, I was actually a little bit surprised to find out that there's various shades of market. There's the black market, the gray market, and the green market. But I guess like the big definition I saw was the black market is the trade and sale of illegal goods in a country or a place. And there's like, it's not one black market that spans the whole world, even though there are international organizations, but there are several black markets that can even be several in one place, depending on what goods they sell.
I heard that there's so much Indian black money in the Swiss bank account that if the Indian government ever got a hold of it, they'd be one of the richest countries in the world.
Yeah, I read that too. Yeah.
It's massive. So what are some examples of black market goods? Of course, there's drugs, prostitution, guns. I think I just hogged all the good ones.
There's copyrighted materials like pirated movies and things, counterfeited money. There's human trafficking, which of course is prostitutes, but there's also slavery in some parts of the world, or people who just they're not allowed to cross borders, but they sneak across borders with the help of the black marketeers.
Hmm. Have you guys ever seen Strange Days?
Yeah, I love that movie. I've been looking for that for ages in Japan.
Ah, you could probably find it on black market.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your local video store. So that's a good example of, you know, science fiction speculating on other types of currency or black currency. So in there, it's memories or experiences. And Lenny, played by Ralph Fiennes, he deals in that. I think they're called squid recordings. It's an acronym. And then, of course, just like there's snuff films, which is in our black market, but then you think about snuff memories and experiences.
It sounds very Eclipse Phase-esque.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Eclipse Phase took a lot of things from Strange Days. Mm. Now, black market isn't just illegal goods, but it's also goods that are not accessible to certain segments of the population. So, I mean, you could look at war rationing, and the soldiers would have access to goods that the civilians didn't. So there'd be some sort of trade-off in that regard. A good example, or a classic example, in movies and books is The Third Man, where the guy deals in penicillin, which of course is not an illegal drug, but what they do is there's a bit of a shortage, so buys penicillin, dilutes it, and sells it, which of course makes it worthless.
Hmm. Well, didn't Prohibition kind of start because they were rationing grain? I mean, like, that wasn't the only cause, but I did read that that was kind of the idea, at least behind the start of Prohibition.
Yeah.
But you ration grain for the war. And so,
it's also the temperance movement.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd never heard that before about the grain.
I mean, it wasn't like, it probably was not the biggest factor in it, but it was a factor.
Well, you know, actually, it's a good point what you had there, said there, Lyle, about the penicillin, is that, you know, we say the black marketeers are people who move illegal goods, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people. I mean, they are doing something illegal, but you can have people who are getting food into places that are where it's been banned, or, you know, people are just kind of spreading around some alcohol for a good time. I don't know. Okay, maybe that might not be a good thing.
The Third Man actually isn't a good example because the guy diluted it, so people are like dying. Spoiler. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because, yeah, there are people that are bringing food into places where there isn't food. You look at the prison guy, you know, Red in Shawshank Redemption. Is he a smuggler? Is he a black marketeer? I guess he's a little bit of both, because certainly they go hand in hand.
It's a bit of a stretch, but I mean, you could kind of lump Robin Hood into that same kind of category. I actually read about one before this episode about a guy in the Soviet Union who was trafficking Beatles records, and he actually worked for a hospital, so he couldn't get a hold of real records to print on it, so he'd print on x-rays, dig the grooves into them, and sell those as records.
I was thinking, like, the way China is going, you know, with the kind of, like, restrictions on internet accessibility, I could see, you know, in the future, perhaps there'd be, like, a market for information that people somehow bring over, where that could be sort of, they're not exactly evil or bad, they're just providing something that is restricted to the population there.
Tell me about LOL cats. You got those pictures? Yeah, I got some pictures. Really? Is this the internet outside of China? What's the big deal?
Geez, yeah, I'll take the Chinese internet over this.
What is this 4chan I hear?
But that, it's interesting how the internet is being used for the black market. I learned about a thing called the Silk Road, which has been called the Amazon for illegal drugs.
And you just stumbled upon this.
No, I guess it's hard to just stumble upon it. You have to, like.
He was actually looking for his fix.
Which is what I was implying.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's the reason we did this episode.
Nobody even more motivated than a junkie.
But I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, the internet, there's a lot out there. There's the dark internet, these little private internet things that I actually knew nothing about, but Lyle told me about just before the episode. But there's a lot of crime that goes on there with spoofing and phishing and whatnot.
Yeah. I don't know. Has it made it less, I hesitate to use the word, but less sexy? Because you watch like a movie like 8mm, and he's tracking down like he's investigating the porn industry or the underground porn industry, like the snuff films. So kind of going to actual locations. But now, if you would do it, you'd be sitting in front of a monitor, I suppose, and trying to go into these groups or these isolated groups on the internet, in the deep web or whatever, and cracking them.
Well, if you're looking at it from a game perspective, I definitely think so. I mean, infiltrating a drug smuggling ring sounds like it would have a lot more action than, you know, setting up a honeypot server and waiting for an ISP to come in.
But I guess that's why a lot of games, when they even when they still have that, they have some sort of grid or some sort of matrix.
Mesh.
Mesh. Interweb.
Yeah.
Super.
Somebody took all the good names. Yeah, already. But it always comes down to, it's like, well, this one's off at the server. Or so you have to actually go to a physical location and break into that.
Like, I know Shadowrun does it a lot. And Eclipse Phase does that. You know, there's things that are off the grid or off the mesh. But, like, it actually does kind of make sense, you know, from like a real-world perspective. I mean, so from like a game perspective, it does make it more interesting or more sexy, to use your word, Lyle, that you would have to, go to this place and, you know, hack into this local network that's off the grid. But it's kind of realistic as well, too. I mean, the safest way to keep a secret is to not tell anybody about it, essentially.
Yeah.
That's the only way to keep a secret, I guess.
And certainly when you're using it in your game, it's a lot better that the black marketeer actually needs to physically meet his or her clients. So even in Strange Days, and of course this is like, 1995, so you're talking about something revolutionary, like being able to record experiences or memories, but he's still like handing over, like I forget what the medium was. Perhaps it's a disc or something similar to a thumb drive, as opposed to just downloading it. And it's like, okay, here's the site, here's the code you need. You know, everything is like, they never meet the client. Everything is faceless. Mm-hmm. But there's not much of a story there, you know?
Right. Well, again, it kind of makes sense, because if you think about it, like, again, using the Eclipse Phase example, when everything's on the internet, it's very easy to fabricate information, or like Chris said, it's easy for that information to be listened in on by someone else. You know, they have like a tap on your ISP address or whatever, or it's real easy for someone else to pick up that information. So if you just send it to them like via a download or something, that you're not guaranteed that it actually gets to the person it needs to, or it could be like a fake identity or something. If you do it face to face, it's, I guess, a little more easy to verify that you're actually, or that the thing is actually getting to the correct place, and you're actually dealing with the person you're supposed to be dealing with. So
there's also something to be said for the mystique of the internet, though, because all you're seeing is text written on a screen, or maybe a voice at the most. You never can really be sure who the person you're talking to is, or what their real intentions are.
Just like playing World of Warcraft.
So why do people do it?
Money.
Yep, that's a big one.
Sorry.
Bringing up money, I mean, that probably is the biggest reason. And I don't know, an important thing to think about if you're going to use black market and black marketeers in your game is that means you actually have to come up with an economy for your setting, or at least have to think about the economy for your setting and how it's going to work.
Absolutely. And not only just the one economy, because there's the main economy, the white market, but then what is the currency in your black market? Is it the same as the white market? Cold hard cash? Or is there something else? Like, if you're talking about True Blood, as we talked about at the beginning of the episode, it could be vampire blood.
It could be people.
I mean, and that's like an extra layer of depravity or immorality, is that you're trading in drugs, but you're trading with people. You're buying guns, but the currency is
organs, harvested organs.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sorry, that was just one of the creepiest ones I came across, yeah.
Yeah. But like you said, it also kind of relies on having at least possibly more than one economy, because like as we said at the beginning, there isn't kind of one globally spanning black market. There's a whole bunch of little ones, sometimes like lots of different ones in the same city, and they may not all take the same currency.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that kind of allows you to add a lot of variety to your game. Also, a lot of more, like, intrigue. You know, I could see, like, being... That would be a really interesting kind of detective game for the players to possibly go through. You know, okay, it's all these supposedly unrelated objects or items or commodities, and you find out that's because people from different black markets are paying each other in the currency they use, which doesn't happen to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's really hard to trace. And another part about the economy, too, is that you have to keep in mind the value of the goods that you're trading. I mean, how much is a prostitute that worth? How much are these drugs? Because it's not going to be the same value as it would be on the regular market, assuming that it is something available.
Yeah, because
how much for a drug prostitute?
Yeah. How much is that at Walmart? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about, like, the typical adventuring party, right, they're always trying to fence stuff that they got. So,
and a fence is a type of black marketeer.
Yeah, they just kind of deal in stolen goods.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing I read is there's usually, like, two modes of I guess, price for black market goods. It'll either kind of be higher than market or higher than normal because they're inaccessible to whatever group of people are buying them until the price is higher, or they're lower than usual cost because they were gotten illegally, and so the person who is selling them can afford to sell them at a discount.
Or they want to get rid of it. It's a hot item.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they also are undercutting. Like, they're buying at one location where it's quite cheap and selling it in a different location where it's quite high. I think a really mundane example is tobacco.
Right.
But you can scale that up to something more spectacular, such as, like, tech.
Mm.
If you're from one world where it's very high tech and it has a lot of stuff accessible, it could be quite cheap. But then you go to a more primitive world and you can sell that for quite a markup. Perhaps the currency that you then would want is magic or something like that. Which then you go back to your other world and sell that at a premium.
Yeah, or labor.
Yeah.
Or I was thinking, like, kind of like we talked about in the Warfare episode, like, we always said it was kind of weird to have different civilizations in close proximity that are different tech levels, because eventually the tech is going to bleed together, and whatever the sort of the best available, whatever the best available is, that's going to predominate. But here's a good example of how that would happen. You know, like you said, you could, like, a black marketeer could essentially sell high-tech level junk to a low-tech level civilization, you know, and make a really good profit. And that wouldn't necessarily have to be money. It could be magic, like you said, or it could be labor, you know, from the population. So
yeah, government put up all these barriers. So if you had these two different worlds, like let's use, the example of a high magic and a high-tech world, the governments have just put up these barriers to kind of protect themselves. It's like, well, we're not going to let any magic in. And the other one's, well, we're not going to let any tech in. That doesn't mean that people don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have these laws in place. So you are selling something that in one land is legal, but in the other land is illegal. So if you wanted to play somebody who is, I guess, a little bit more morally ambiguous as opposed to somebody who's just like...
Evil?
Evil. Then that would be a way to go. Yeah.
Hmm.
And again, it gets back into what is your economy, and you can make your economy kind of unfair. So if somebody, right now, you know, alcohol is freely available. So when we look back at Prohibition, we will look at the rum runners and the speakeasies and say, well, you know, well, of course you're going to do that.
Hmm.
But maybe at the time you're like, well, these guys are evil. Or they'd be like the drug dealers are now.
Right.
And if they legalize drugs, then we look back and it's like, oh, remember when marijuana was illegal? Yeah. What were we thinking?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the moral ambiguity is one of the things that I thought was most interesting about the whole black market idea for a game, because you can really kind of twist with what is and what isn't right. Like an example I thought of was if somebody, a black marketeer, is selling food in this area in a famine, then they're selling it at really extortionate prices. Are they good or are they bad? Because they're selling it at a terrible price that people can barely afford. But if they're not doing it, then there's no food.
I'd say that person is bad. It's a little less than gray, but yeah.
Well, I suppose it's not so much the moral ambiguity of him, but it's kind of what would the party do about it? You know, do they then take up the importing the food themselves or something?
Or organ, the organ black market, because a lot of, you know, there's a big waiting list for livers and kidneys and that. And of course, if they're killing people to gain these organs, of course, that's very black. They're evil. But if they're facilitating somebody selling a kidney, I guess maybe the liver was a bad example. I'll sell you my... Oh, you can die from that? Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Read the
I don't have two.
Okay, kidney. and maybe one testicle. One eye. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, all they're doing is bringing two people together.
Hmm.
Somebody who's got the money or another type of currency, and somebody who's got the organs. Yeah. Somebody who has a love of children, and somebody who has children.
Somebody who has a love of children, someone perhaps who has too many children.
Yeah, someone who has a lot of love to give.
There's also people who work for the government. There's this one guy I read about. His name is, I'm not sure I can say this right, Sarkis Songhalian or something. He was nicknamed the Merchant of Death, but he was one of the biggest arms dealers in the world. He sold artillery devices worth billions of dollars to Iraq and wherever. Eventually, when he was caught by America, they eventually let him go because he was able to break up a counterfeiting ring in Lebanon where the U.S. government couldn't get in.
Is he the person that the Lord of War is based on?
Kind of. The Lord of War is based on, like, yeah, three or four different guys, but yeah. He was the main one.
I think the Lord of War is it's actually not a bad movie, but it's about a Nicolas Cage as a arms dealer, an illegal arms dealer. Okay. But, yeah, he's likable, so he kind of fits into the rogue idea. And that's when we talk about these crimes, of course, yeah, you could play an out-and-out evil, bad person, but that can be pretty dark and depressing. A lot of times we like to think of like more of the roguish person who is more gray,
the Han Solo kind of guy.
Yeah. And the Lord of War is a good example of somebody, and you see kind of get into why he does what he does and how he does it. Hmm. Which we'll talk about a little bit later. And yeah, kind of like the life he kind of leads. I guess the Sopranos, you know, it's about the mafia. Hmm. But you can kind of see that there's more to this person than just being a mafia thug. Although you're always a little bit disappointed when you watch like a mafia TV series or a movie, and that, you know, a lot of the stuff that they deal in is just like stolen TVs or microwaves or
cigarettes.
Yeah, you're like, boring.
But meanwhile, when you run afoul of the mob, you're like, I'm glad you guys are just dealing in cigarettes. All right. Yeah.
So we've talked about the number one reason that a lot of people get into the black market is to make money. What are some other motivations, do you think?
You could have somebody who does black marketing just because that's all they've ever known. Kind of like that Lord of War thing. He never decided, I want to be a gun smuggler. He just kind of fell into it. Or somebody who maybe sold and imported alcohol and then suddenly prohibition hits. What are they to do?
Yeah. So just following all they know.
Or maybe like something with the internet. If somebody's good at doing like a malicious code, maybe that's just what they're good at. So. Actually, for that matter, somebody who does like hacking. Well, I suppose hacking doesn't really count as black marketing, but there could be people who just do it to be malicious or for fun, quote unquote.
Yeah, no. If somebody who's done it previously, I think there's a lot of you can do with that. Like, yeah, going again back to the one example of high magic, high tech is like, yeah, maybe there's magic in the world and then it's been outlawed. But you come from a magical family, or you've trained all your life to be a wizard, or maybe it's. People are just born that way. They're just born magical, or they're born psionic. So you want to share your talents. And maybe you want to share your talents with the people, not the government. So you can also have a situation where they round up all the psionics to work for them in hit squads or some sort of psionic ethernet.
It could just be ideology. Eclipse Phase is a good example of that. You have like the setting is basically divided into two sections, inner system and outer system. And the outer system believes in complete and free exchange of information. Basically, you should never have to pay for anything. While the inner system is sort of corporate controlled, and all the information is disseminated through corporations. Not so much in a dystopian manner as other settings, but still. And I guess in that one, you would have black marketeers who would sell nanofabrication plans from the outer system to people who would want it on the inner system. And it's not necessarily because they're evil, or I suppose they would still want to make some kind of return on it, but it's just because, no, they believe that this thing should be free, and they're simply helping people obtain it.
Yeah, there's, you know, knowledge as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, if a government bans certain types of books, then a black marketeer would be the person to go to get those books, you know, censorship or whatever, but yeah.
in a realistic campaign, it could be something like a place that has one religion only allowed, but somebody else is trying to, you know, sneak Bibles in. But you could also put that in a fantastic setting as well, where this city only recognizes a certain god, but your character could be a cleric of another god who's trying to, you know, spread the good word.
Not to split hairs, but for that one, would the character be the cleric, or would the black marketeer be the person who could, like, hook up the two parties, like the people who wanted the new religion and the cleric of the new religion?
You could really go either way with it. I mean, the person who sells organs on the black market could also be the doctor who cuts them out, or it could be separate.
I think it would be better if they were kind of the in-betweener, the person who facilitated the hookup. Because if they were the cleric of a certain god that's perhaps outlawed, they're kind of like a little bit of an evangelist or a missionary as opposed to an actual black marketeer. Because I think that's real key, is like, if you make the black marketeer too evil, then that can make for a bad game, really, because then you're just playing a pretty ruthless, despicable human being. If you make them too good and too altruistic, then that can be quite boring, because all you're doing is playing like a great human being, like a paladin economist or a paladin merchant or something like that. So I think you really want to strike that balance, is that, you know, they are going to benefit personally somehow a little bit. Mm.
That can be a pretty hard balance to strike, because it's not exactly the same thing. But when I ran the Changeling game, the Goblin Market, that was kind of like a black market, right? The goblins who lived on the other side of this hedge, they would sell stuff to people who came over.
Yeah.
And they were black marketeers, right? Like, they didn't own this stuff. They just kind of found it, and then they sold it to people. And it was kind of hard to find a reason why you guys would go back and buy stuff.
So. Well, because they offer things that you can't find elsewhere, and that's the key. But that's a good example, because it brings up that whether or not your black marketeer is an NPC or your black marketeer is a PC, there should be a certain level of distrust. Is this product tainted? You know, is it diluted penicillin, or is it rotten food? You know, that's going to make me sick. Is it
mixed with wood alcohol? I'm going to go blind from drinking this moonshine.
Yeah.
You know, I might actually defer with you a little bit, Lyle, on what you're saying before about playing like a goody two shoes paladin. I think this is one situation where that character might fit pretty well. Because if he's working in the black market, if, for example, he's trying to smuggle in healing potions or something good into an otherwise evil society, I mean, the fact that it's illegal makes it the black market. I could see how kind of doing something illegal but still doing something good could really tear at a character who's supposed to be all in all good.
Yeah, I guess so. What you're playing to me is not a rogue per se, but playing a hero.
That's a very good point, though, yeah.
Yeah, but I know what you say. I don't see that in internal turmoil, and I'm not saying a black marketeer needs that, because if it's an evil society that somehow has banned healing or whatever, and they're providing healing potions, then it's really hard to, like, be torn up about that. I mean, you're going to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And people are going to trust you implicitly. It's like, wow, he's giving me a healing potion that's worked 100% of the time. But, I mean, what about... You got a healing potion, but he got to cut that. Mm. Oh, here's a dilemma. Oh, yeah. Maybe, Chris, you got something there. It's like, you need to give it to three people, but you only have enough for two. So do you cut it? So it's not going to work as well, but...
It would be better than nothing.
Yeah, it'll give it to three people, or do you just ignore the third person?
Mm.
So, or is this like where pricing comes in? You're like, great, I only got two. Who can pay the most?
Ooh.
And maybe you are a good person, but you're like, that's the simplest solution.
It's dangerous to get the stuff in. You know, I'm risking my neck. I need that payment to make sure I can get more in so that I can get you next time. Sorry.
You could add a role-playing aspect to it, is, okay, they have a heart of gold. So it's not so much who can pay me more, but who's got the biggest hard luck story. So whether or not the PCs are the buyers, or... NPCs are the buyers. I mean, there's still that interaction between the storyteller, the game master, and the PCs. We've talked about it. I know Wayne and I complain about it. Chris, you're more of a fan, but the artificial Savage Worlds mechanic of, you know, to try to encourage storytelling.
Oh, the interlude rules.
Interlude rules, sorry. Yeah, I always forget.
I don't like them.
Purge it from my mind. But this is an example of how to do that naturally.
That's actually a really good idea. I like that a lot, because if you had to make the choice between who of these three people gets the potion, then that means one person's going to go away not thinking that you're a nice guy, and he's going to tell his friends that same thing, and maybe pretty soon your sparkling reputation is gone.
Yeah.
At least for some people.
Hmm. Same with the food. You got to cut it. I mean, food's not really spectacular or fantastic, but yeah, like in Leningrad during World War II, and they were eating like sawdust, like bread with like 90% sawdust, and it's just like, well, some of it's bread, some of it's, you know,
10% of it is bread.
Yeah, but it'll fill your belly
better than pure sawdust alone.
Yeah. So yeah, but it gets back. So yeah, maybe I was too. Maybe I shouldn't have said that you should not play a good person as a black marketeer, but I guess you should always enforce the moral dilemma, because I think that's what makes a black marketeer particularly interesting, is perhaps the moral dilemma. Even a pimp could have that, is that, sure, they're... Let me run with it a bit.
Sorry, I'm just thinking like there's three guys waiting on the curb. Which one needs it more?
I didn't think that, but I can see now why you were laughing. All right.
Stella, you're helping him. You're helping. Yeah, but I mean, you're giving, you're providing an income to these women. I guess that's what you could tell yourself at night. I don't know.
Yeah,
sure. If we think of a very realistic pimp, I mean, it's really hard to make that an appealing character to play. But you look at, you know, madams from fiction and that, they're very sophisticated. Some of them sometimes encourage their women to educate themselves, perhaps to be able to talk to the clients and that, maybe a high price call girls, but perhaps to have a future, you know. They're only going to be able to do this job for a short period of time, so there is that. A story could be one of your girls gets killed or cut up.
You know, you could also do it as kind of a reformed character as well, you know. The guy says, yeah, I might be a pimp now, but, you know, I used to deal in slaves, so I'm moving up in the world.
Okay, yeah. I was actually going to think...
Or not.
That perhaps could be a nice carryover for whatever rogue or criminal you play, is the ex-rogue, is the ex-criminal. So they have all the information. So they're actually like a guide, you know, your black market guide. So they're in a sense, they're still kind of a black marketeer. They're actually selling information on how to access the black market. And Wayne was talking about one city could have, you know, half a dozen to a dozen different black markets, and they happen to know how to get to each one. That's used to good effect in 8mm. So Nicolas Cage doesn't know this world, so he needs to hire somebody who does know the world and to use that.
I think it's the selling of the information that kind of makes that person a black marketeer, because that's what the black marketeer does. They, like, sell things. So in some situations, the person selling the item, the person, I guess, who obtained the item or the service can be the same thing or the same person. Like, Chris, you suggested, like, well, you know, in an organ trade, it could be the doctor who performs the surgery and also sells the organs. I kind of see that as a black marketeer. But I think if the person isn't selling it, then they aren't really a black marketeer, which I think is kind of like the salient point.
Okay.
Yeah, you could probably take something off of that TV show Breaking Bad. If anybody hasn't seen that, it's about a legit chemist who finds out he's going to have cancer. So he starts making drugs in order to make enough money for his family after he dies. But you could kind of go into that. You could say, like, maybe some kind of government worker. He does international deals with these countries for military goods. And then same kind of deal. He finds out that he's only got 6 months to live. So he decides he wants to use all of his contacts to try and make as much money as he can before he goes out. Or he turns to revenge or something like that.
Does this chemist see in the future?
I'm sorry?
Because you said he finds out he's going to have cancer.
Well, you know.
In 3 months, I will get cancer.
Arms trader, psychic, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Right. You can do the scaling up guy. The guy sells slaves, then he sells prostitutes, and now he sells information on how to access either the slave trade or the prostitution trade.
Hmm. Yeah, and he somehow convinced himself that he's a better person.
Well, he doesn't deal with that anymore. So
yeah.
I can see that rationale. Kind of.
Ish.
Yeah.
That's my retirement plan.
All right, so finally we get into the how. How do you do it? And there are a couple of obstacles. I mean, we've touched on some about the morality.
Cops.
Oh, cops. Some of your antagonists. And there's also the example, is a lot of our classic examples of a black marketeer are solo acts. Or you only see kind of that tip of the iceberg. A lot of them do actually have partners, of course. Or they also work in like one field, so their partners are other drug dealers who work different corners. So is that what you do? You know, we're talking about games where you have a party. So is the Black Marketeer a member of the party, or is everybody a Black Marketeer?
Well, I mean, they're not Black Marketeers in any sense, but I think you could take a page from the TV show Leverage, in that you have a team of specialists that all specialize in different things. And like I said, they're not Black Marketeers, but different abilities are required to pull off the con. So even if you all like work in one field, I could see, okay, we're going to meet this person. The buyer kind of only respects strength. We need the face guy to make sure the deal goes through. And we need like the tough guy to make sure that the face comes back in one piece.
Yeah, I think your iceberg analogy was really good, Lyle, because almost anyone who does a black market is going to have a lot of support or an entire network underneath them. There's the people who create whatever goods they're selling or people who steal them. There's the transportation of them into the place where they are illegal so they can be sold. And really, kind of the black marketeer is just the end guy in the chain.
I could see like the transport person being part of the party. And I think if, not to split hairs here, but I think if the PC group is also manufacturing or obtaining the product or the service they're going to sell, then you kind of get out of the realm of black marketeering into like the whole, this whole, I think you've crossed the line to maybe organized crime or some other kind of organization.
Yeah, then you're getting into thievery and production and smuggling and all that other stuff. But to say that there's a lot of different ways into it. But like you said, Wayne, there's, I mean, people who are dealing illegal goods, it's a dangerous world, so they're probably going to need enforcers, and they're probably going to need other connections back to their smuggling lines. So there's definitely room for an entire party around this.
Yeah, they go hand in hand, and they work with a lot of different people. Black marketeers work quite closely with smugglers, because they're the people who move the product. I think what would be interesting, and it's a little bit artificial, in that black marketeers, some of them sell a variety of goods, but a lot of them are, especially when we talk about the very illegal things, are specialists. They specialize in guns, or they specialize in drugs, or they specialize in prostitution. There's very little overlap. A big organization might do all of that, but a small group would specialize. But you could have somebody who is kind of one of those like generic or open black marketeers, and games could actually start with them getting an order. Hmm. It's like they don't have the information in front of them, or they don't have the organs or the children or whatever.
It's a dark game, dude.
Sorry, 8-year-old boy, just a second. Just walk outside. All right, anything else? There's a 10-year-old out there, dude.
Game I would run.
But that can start. I mean, a lot of Shadowrun games like would start up there. Like, we need you to move this information, but it's just, hey, we need this. Go break it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you are crossing the line in that. The black marketeer is almost just the front. They are the face person in that they're doing the transaction. But, of course, then that person then kind of joins the thievery team or the hacking team to obtain it.
Well, kind of going with the team thing, kind of like we said at the beginning, there's no real universal or overarching black market, right? There's just kind of these little specialized areas, like you said, all these, you know, guns, prostitutes, drugs, whatever. I mean, this does kind of, I guess, cross the line into kind of organized crime. But I could see everyone in the PC group is a black marketeer who just specializes in a different area. And they said, for whatever reason, we're all going to work together and we're going to kind of set up that service, like you said. So between the five of us or the six of us, whatever it is, we're going to be able to get people what they want because we have all these specialists in these different areas. And wow, that does kind of sound like a creepy game, doesn't it?
No, just thinking it's like they're all specialists, so in order to have everybody participate, you'd have to put in orders like, I'd like an Uzi with a pound of cocaine, and if you just smear that on a beautiful woman,
who
knows a lot about this forbidden text, you know.
I can just imagine like, the person like at the end of the line like opens up the crate and all the crap that's in it, like, wow, everything. All right.
But, you know, there was an old game I played back in the day. I've mentioned it before, Cyberpunk 2020. And they had a character class in it called the Fixer. And even if your group didn't have a Fixer, you would almost always have an NPC as a Fixer. And that person was basically a general black marketeer. They either hired out the group to go and do something like a run in the Shadowrun game, or they got the group the materials they would need to do a run.
Yeah. I was thinking it'd get kind of, I guess, monotonous. I don't know how many games you could do it, but as we said, currency can be different between the black markets, even in a small area. So it could almost be like that clue chain, right? Like you could be a detective, like an 8mm, trying to figure out how this all works, and you have to go through all these different currencies. Or you could be on the other side of the line, and great, now you have to obtain this thing. But to get there, you have to go through all these other different markets so that you're untraceable, which means you're going to have to deal in all these different currencies, which means you're going to have people who need to know about each currency you're going to be dealing in to get to the end. So, like, I don't think it would be that interesting to do a bunch of games. Oh, great. So we do guns first, then drugs, then prostitutes, then information. And this time now it's the information first. And so maybe like one or two games.
Yeah, I think this is something that it's really good because you can scale this to almost any level. I mean, you can start with just a regular dealer on a street corner with some drugs, and it can, you know, span all the way up to these huge multinational, international drug smuggling rings. And, you know, you can carry your character along all the way through it on one end, or maybe be the cop investigating and just see how deep the rabbit hole goes. Sorry, that was my Morpheus.
Yeah, we see that a lot. I just, when you mentioned the cops, like the informant-cop relationship, and that can help, like, formalize it if you do have two PCs or more than one PC interacting in that way, and that's how, like, things start. And perhaps the first adventure is, how did this person who is just a black marketeer start to work with, let's say, more good authorities or more heroic people in order to solve crimes or to take down people who are worse than him or her?
Or if you want to go the flip side of the coin, how can this general black marketeer work with authorities to corrupt them?
Yeah. Now, black marketeers, I mean, they rely on connections, so that would imply that a lot of times they're very stable. And that's not always the case, of course. Gun runners are very mobile. But what about a static black marketeer? It's kind of fixed in a limited location. Can you see that working in a game?
I don't know. Can you give me an example? Because when I was thinking about it, one of the things I wrote down in my notes was that they have to be mobile, because you never really know when the authorities are going to catch up to you. So you have to be able to go at a split second. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, sure, they have to be able to like leave a particular room, and maybe they do have to make themselves scarce, but then they have to like kind of set up their network again. And they are reliant on a network. How big that network is up to you. But if you're talking about, like, I'm thinking like World of Darkness games are very much focused on cities, mm-hmm. like especially Changeling or Vampire. Mm. So there is a good example of how you can use a black marketeer, because the game doesn't really extend beyond those boundaries, those very fixed boundaries.
Yeah, especially for vampires, yeah.
Yeah, or even like in Changeling, I mean, you do have like the hedge in that, but I mean, that makes it even better for you, because you go into that and you go into the mundane and the fairy world and that, and you can traffic in those materials.
I can't think of any examples, but I do kind of agree that generally the black, not always, but yeah, the black marketeer would kind of have to be kind of static or set, because if you move around too frequently or too often, you do kind of lose the connections you would have built up, which means your business would be kind of bad.
And also, your clients can't find you.
But and I can't think of any examples, but countless times in movies, you kind of get like the high profile character. I don't know, maybe they're part of like a country club, or they're you know, police chief, or just like a politician, or just a very prominent person who actually is kind of like a black marketeer. And it works because they have a very selective clientele, or they're incredibly secretive about what they do, or they just have a lot of leverage over other people to make sure that their secret isn't told, or a lot of protection. You'd need some mix of that to have a static black marketeer. There'd have to be enough safety there for the black marketeer so that they wouldn't just kind of cut and run, essentially.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what they could do then is, like you said, then they have to make deals. So they'll have to provide something to the authorities. And yeah, a lot of authorities are corrupt. Hmm. So when they break down your door, then you're like, okay, you caught me. What do you need? and that can be the start of something. Or you can have a very expansive network, such as if you think about a military black marketeer, and they go from army base to army base, and they kind of set that up because they have connections all over the world, or if it's science fiction, all over multiple planets. Mm. If you're playing a military campaign, everywhere that unit goes, they've kind of, you know, everybody's playing a different role. And one of those roles could be, sure, that person is grunt number three, but they're also the black marketeer, the guy that can procure things anywhere, somehow, you know.
Yeah, it just gave me an idea. You could play that role inside a prison as well, the guy who gets things from the outside.
Yeah, that would require, like, certainly a different kind of protection. You know, like Lyle said, making deals with guards so that you mm-hmm. they kind of turn a blind eye, or making deals with other prisoners to act as, like, bodyguards so that people don't try and beat you up or rough you up. But traveling from military base to military base reminded me, it's not military, but reminded me of that Eclipse Phase supplement I brought up before, The Stars Are Destination, because the scum barge makes a circuit around the inner system, and it's always the same circuit. And because planets, you know, they don't stay still, the circuit can take longer or shorter depending on the positions, but it's always the set. They always do, or they always hit the same stops in the same order. So they kind of have a schedule, essentially, for black market operations, you know?
It's almost like those merchants that would travel from town to town, like in the Old West or even in old Europe. And not only would they bring, like, different goods that people couldn't get, but also, like, stories of the other places.
And snake oil.
Lots of snake oil.
And the pox.
Not a lot of snake oil, because you got to cut it. You only have enough for two people. I thought that was funny. All right.
That's all right. Yeah. I smile.
Yeah. Which works great on an audio podcast.
You got to earn the laughs. But, like, how do you make a black marketeer character? Because we've talked about it. They are a buyer and seller of things, of illegal things. How do you make that character? But let's think of... Of course, there's the obvious settings, such as Changeling, but maybe the less obvious settings, such as your average Dungeons & Dragons game.
I was going to say, in that one, like, let's be honest, the point of D&D is getting loot.
And killing stuff. Murder hobos.
Well, that too. That's how you get the loot, usually. Not always. Sometimes you have to steal things, and PCs are always selling stuff. So why wouldn't you have someone in your party who is skilled at selling things that people want? Kind of rolls into the thief or the rogue.
Or the bard.
Or the bard class. Yeah, bard would make a great one.
Mm-hmm.
Or the reluctant paladin. And it's like, people love you.
Go sell all this stuff we just stole. You'll get a better price for it because people love you.
It depends a lot what your campaign is. Like, if it's a high magic campaign, you might need somebody with a good charisma to be able to get you a good deal on, say, magical weapons or artifacts or something, because they are so common. But on the other hand, if it were a low-level campaign, you might actually run into trouble with the authorities, because they wouldn't want, you know, just regular commoners getting their hands on these powerful magic weapons.
Yeah, back to controlling the economy. I mean, you could make it where magic items are heavily regulated. So they do exist, but they're, for all intents and purposes, illegal.
Yeah.
So even when the players, like, find, like, magic items in some dungeon, then what do they do with them? You know, they can use them secretly, or what if they try to sell them? I mean, it's very difficult for them to be able to convert these magic items into cold, hard cash. I mean, how many magic swords are they going to, you know, they got five swords. You know, I got two arms.
You just tie them all together.
Yeah.
The one big sword.
Yeah. Actually, I think that's a great setup for being able to introduce a black market character or black marketeer, because you said if the items that the PCs get are restricted, then the players kind of would have to balance, okay, my character will be better if I use this item, but it's going to cause a whole lot of problems for me if I get caught with it or if someone sees me with it. So I could see that presenting the opportunity to become a black marketeer and to get rid of this thing. Because I'm thinking kind of like the normal D&D structure, great, a plus 10 sword, no way in heck I'm selling this, I'm using it, and the opportunity doesn't really come up. But if it's more like, hey, that sword, yeah, that's going to be restricted, I'm going to get in big trouble if someone sees me with this thing, maybe the better option is to ditch it.
Yeah. It could be the other way too, trying to get a hold of it. You know, we're off to go kill a werewolf, but you know, it takes a plus one sword, but those are illegal. How the heck do I get a hold of one of those?
Yeah, just imagine, like, your party sits down for their first game and it's like, all right, so, you know, it's your standard fantasy setting. Yeah, magic items are legal. What? They don't exist. And it's like, what? They exist. They're just illegal.
Well, I believe the player response to that is, why are we playing 4E then? Impossible.
Yeah.
Or even just, you said, like, it would be a lot harder, but just magic is regulated. And magic users aren't, they're not registered. or they're only registered at really low levels, which means, hey, you want that higher spell, you're going to have to obtain it somehow through the black market.
Yep.
Yeah, that's very good.
Kind of just makes it more interesting than, as we said before, just gaining new spells when you gain a level. Great, how do you get it?
Yeah. I think, though, like a black marketeer, as opposed to like a black market, they kind of work best in systems which have skills or it's some sort of advantages, disadvantages, or World of Darkness has merits. Because that's where you can establish or buy contacts or gain contacts. A black marketeer would also be good at economics or accounting. The GURPS recommends, like, if you're going to play that, and a lot of it is, like, very financial type skills. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the cut-and-run skills that Chris mentioned before, and, yeah, they should be reasonably good at some sort of weapon because it's a dangerous world.
Or be wealthy enough to hire bodyguards.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or clever enough to put up cover identities.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. You'll be known by a different name every place you go.
Yep.
Well, you know, I figure you could really play any kind of character you want as a black marketeer because it's got the social aspect because you need to sell to other people. It's got the cerebral aspect because you have to kind of stay ahead of the authorities. And it's got physical because it's dangerous.
Great. I'm the fighter who uses intelligence as a dump stat. I'm a black marketeer. You might want to rethink that.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a fair price. Yeah.
That'd actually make a pretty funny character. Might be annoying after a while if you keep coming back like, yeah, I got all this great stuff for us, and you're like, this is crap.
All right, well, just to finish up then, what would you guys, if you played a black marketeer or created a campaign for the black market, what kind of setting would you use for it?
I think a black marketeer would be most interesting for me in Eclipse Phase because there's just a lot of stuff you can transport, and I don't know, it makes it seem like it would be more of a challenge to be a black marketeer in that setting because there's so many ways you can be discovered, but there's also lots of tools you can use to assist in being a black marketeer, like, you know, changing your body through the uploading or downloading into sleeves and the different clash of ideologies. You know, it allows you to be that kind of gray person where you're not necessarily being evil, you're just providing something you think is fair to someone who lives in an area where it might be restricted. I think that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, I think so. Eclipse Phase would be awesome for that. I was actually thinking sci-fi myself for it, just because, you know, like running between planets with futuristic kind of commodities would be a lot of fun. But, you know, actually, after we talked about just with D&D, right there, the idea of illegal magic weapons and sounds awesome. That's totally what I would want to try and do.
Yeah, there's things like the Strange Days example, like the memories. That can work in any setting, really. Of course, there, they use tech. But in a fantasy setting, it could be magic that does it, like little memory stones or whatever. Yeah, I would actually probably want to do it in a modern setting, and maybe a pretty mundane modern setting. But then what I would use is the black market actually is like a gateway to discovery, where they discover that there's all these fantastic items on the black market. Like, if you can buy vampire blood on the black market, that's telling you now that vampires exist in this world.
Mm.
And kind of using it that, so using the black market as a bit of a focal point.
I wish I'd said that. That's such an awesome idea.
Yeah. Because I could see, you could either have, like, an NPC as the black marketeer, or the PCs, like, entering into the black. Like, they're on the one level of the black market, and that's where the game starts. They discover that it's a whole nother level, or a client comes to them and says, I want this, and you're like, I can get that for you. And you're like, what does that mean?
You know, that reminds me of the Keanu Reeves movie Constantine.
Oh, okay.
Where that guy comes to his house and he's like, oh, Dragon's Breath, I didn't think they made this anymore. He's like, oh, I know a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like a supernatural movie, but I could, you know, see that being really interesting. Like, whoa, you want what? You said you want unicorn horn powder? Sorry, yeah. Come again?
And I'm chafing a little bit because I read the comic books that they're based off.
Yeah, Hellblazer. Yeah, yeah.
So you're like talking about Constantine. I'm like ready to just jump in.
I know,
and go on.
I know.
Based on the comic books, Hellblazer. But,
yeah. Oh, so the places are reversed where I usually rage about Game of Thrones.
All right. Yeah. No, that's good. It's almost like when you see this in some pretty decent detective stories where it's the mundane detective or a normal detective, but then they find out that this is the whole other world. And that's actually, yeah, I've talked about this a lot, but 8mm is like, you know, snuff films to us are urban legends, and he's asked to investigate this world, and, you know, he's completely unfamiliar. And just how dark, how deep, how fantastic, how supernatural this can go is all in control of the game master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 8mm is a good example of where it's kind of only mundane.
Yeah.
But ordinary things can be pretty terrible, you know, when you find out what's going on.
Yeah.
as I yeah, that movie.
It's weird. It's not fantastic, but it's almost hard to call it mundane, you know?
Yeah. Or imagine, like, you have, like, your kind of bog-standard science fiction setting, but then you start to find out, you know, when you go to these different worlds, their black market is not, like, what we would consider a black market. You can get some pretty crazy stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how I'd use it. Maybe any setting is fine, but it's the gateway into a whole new world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of one of the, I guess, the drawbacks of Eclipse Phase, because it is so fantastic. Like, they've run across one alien species in that setting, and they're completely and utterly different from humanity.
Yeah.
They said the closest thing they are is to, like, slime molds, intelligent slime molds. And there's, like, rumors going around that certain corporations have made deals with them for alien tech, but you don't know. And it's kind of like you said, the basic Eclipse Phase setting is so fantastic to us. I think that would kind of be lost on players if you brought that in.
That is, yeah, I could see that danger. Yeah, it's like, wow, we can cure alien tech. Great, I can sleeve into an octopus body.
Right.
And you're like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, so what's this alien tech? It's kind of like a laser. Oh, yeah, thanks. Oh, that sounds great, yeah.
And, you know, I'll go make that deal in my octopus body.
Yeah.
I always thought with Eclipse Phase, it'd be fun to run a campaign where the body swapping is illegal. You're only allowed to have the one body that you have, but it'd be really cool to have a black market behind where there is, you know, buying and trading different identities and the bodies that go with them.
There is kind of an option for that. There's like one faction that's they're based on one of the moons of Jupiter, and they're kind of like bioconservatists, and they believe that, you know, you shouldn't sleeve into other bodies and you shouldn't augment yourself, and it's very totalitarian government, and kind of made me think of that. I never really thought that would be that interesting to play, because then you're restricted to a very small area of that game world.
Mm. We definitely haven't played enough Eclipse Phase.
Well, we'll end on Eclipse Phase, which was Wayne's word for the day, or two words for the day.
Phrase. Wayne's phrase. Wayne's phrase. Wayne's phrase. All right.
Excellent.
Party time. Excellent.
Hey, the 90s called. Wants its joke back.
You know that Bad Boys 2 was originally written for Dana Carvey and John Lovitz?
Bad Boys 2?
Or sorry, the original Bad Boys was written for Dana Carvey and John Lovitz.
That makes more sense than Bad Boys 2.
You had unemployed Dana Carvey and unemployed John Lovitz turning it down. Well, I guess we'll go back to Will Smith. It was written for them?
It was. But I guess the producer went out, showed them out to a night in Vegas to talk about the movie. But he showed them to such a wild night that they both quit. And Disney sold the rights to Columbia, who turned it into an action movie and hired Michael Bay.
Really?
Some trivia for you.
How wild was this night?
It's apparently pretty wild, I'm guessing, if Dana Carvey and John Lovitz, because, you know, those guys are known for partying.
Whoa, I got to stay up past 11? Oh, I don't think I can handle this.
Well, Dana Carvey's like, party time, excellent. Anyway, thanks for joining us again on Over to Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, at overtohands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website, or download them through iTunes or Stitcher or DriveThruRPG. You can also post in our forums, follow us on Twitter, post on Facebook, or sign up and talk to us in the forums, because we love to hear from all of you. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
Yeah. You know Wayne doesn't like karaoke?
Oh, what was it? AKB that your girlfriend sang when we were at karaoke before.
Isn't that funny? It's like he doesn't like it, but he makes his girlfriend sing it.
I didn't make her sing it! I did not make her sing it.
Do the dance.
Oh, that combined with I don't fetish people's wives comments. It's making me look like isn't it?
Yeah, put that in the outtakes.
All right. Oh, all right.